Hi everyone, welcome back to the Toilet Podcast. This is your host Rahilu. Happy New Year. It's officially 2019. I've been home chilling. I've been taking yoga classes, going to the gym, steaming, trying to prepare myself and strengthen myself for what's to come in 2019. So today I'm going to tell you all my story. So I'm a bit nervous because I have a hard time telling the story, because if I was to really tell the story how it happened, I think this would be like a 15, 20 episodes long season of just me talking about my life and all the shit that I've experienced. So I'm going to do my absolute best to condense it in a way that is digestible, in a way that's not going to keep you here for like 15 hours listening. And also try to get every, or the most important aspects of my life in this episode. So I'm actually going to start in the beginning and I'm going to reintroduce myself. So allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is R, H-I-L-U-A. I want to start from the beginning, and I want to talk about my parents and how they have impacted the person that I am today. My mom is the sweetest person to me. I know she's absolutely incredibly forgiving, which is where my story really starts. And if you follow me on social media, I share about how I've had a hard time with vulnerability because I've always viewed it as a weakness, right? So my mom is like the nicest person ever. I think people really took advantage of that a lot. And those people were family members, just people around her. So growing up and seeing that, I was just like, nah, nobody's going to take advantage of me. So now you have a child who's like 5 and she's determined to not let anyone take advantage of her. And I think that's when my, this no-nonsense attitude developed, right? Because I was just like, yo, ain't nobody gonna take advantage of me, and I'm gonna fight. I'm gonna fight, and I'm gonna fight. I'm not gonna be a woman in this world who people are gonna take advantage of. And coming from where I come from, right? So I'm a girl who was born in Guinea, right? And my family's Fulani. So in our culture, a woman is supposed to be docile. She's supposed to be nice and quiet and smile and cook and this and that. And my mom was that, and she was nice, and I didn't think it got her very far, right? So I was determined to be the opposite. The second, I think, most impactful part of my story is that I really wasn't raised by my parents. I was raised by other people. So I did live with my parents, but I've also lived with a lot of different people. I was just raised by different relatives who, you know, probably thought that they were doing the best for me. And so because of that, I always had to be on my best behavior, because I never wanted anyone to feel like I was ungrateful. And being raised by other people just put me in really vulnerable situations. And again, it just went back to me having to, from a very young age, understanding that I really just have to protect myself. That was like my main thing. Like, I have to protect myself. Sometimes we are born to parents, we are born to families, we are born to people who are still healing, right? We are just a person in their story, you know? So, you know, sometimes we look to our parents and our mothers and our aunts and our uncles and our sisters and our brothers for guidance. I never felt like anyone's priority, ever. I think that I was just born into someone else's story, right? And so I felt from a young age that I had to be my own priority, that I had to be my own savior. I had to make it. Like, I was raised on survival, and I had to make it, and I didn't have a choice, because there is nothing to fall back on. There is no one to fall back on. Everyone around me was going through their own personal shit. They were going through their own challenges. So if I failed, nobody was going to be there to pick me up. And even if they wanted to, they wouldn't have the either the resources or the understanding or the compassion to do so. So I just knew from a young age that I just had to make it. And a lot of times as I grew older, especially when I started dating, a lot of men would be like, yo, who broke your heart? And I would say nobody, but the reality was that I think the first heartbreak that I experienced was seeing from a young age that the people around me who were supposed to save me couldn't and wouldn't. Again, not intentionally, but just because they couldn't, and I couldn't rely on them. So I think that was my biggest heartbreak as a kid. And even the fact that I could recognize that as a kid is incredible, I would say. But that was something that was hard to swallow. But I think that, but I'm happy that I was able to understand that. I spent the rest of my life trying to make sure that I protect myself. Granted, this idea of living on survival and always having to protect yourself hasn't necessarily been the best way to live my life, right? I would say it's definitely blocked me from a lot of things because I've always been guarded, no matter what. I've always been guarded. And even in friendships, I've always been guarded with family, with friendships, with everyone. And that's because I'm very sensitive, and I think a lot of people don't understand that. When people meet me, the first thing they always call me crazy. but when people meet me, I always get the, oh my God, when I first met you, I thought you were a bitch. That, but you're actually really cool. Or they just think I'm like mean, but I'm actually not a mean person. I'm actually a very nice person, but I've always been guarded, but that's something that I've had to develop in order to protect myself. Granted, it's protected me in some instances and it hasn't in others. But now the challenge as I'm growing up becomes knowing when to be guarded and when to not be guarded, right? And that's where the concept of vulnerability comes in for me, because I'm always guarded. The only time that maybe they've seen me cry, but probably like once. And I think if I started to cry to my friends, they would probably like panic because they wouldn't know what to do and they would start crying. But I always kind of just built a reputation of being the strong friend, the strong girl. And now it's like kicking my ass because I'm changing. I no longer really necessarily have to be on survival mode all the time. I have the time, the space, the understanding to feel my emotions and feel them all the way. And when I feel like that, I don't necessarily feel like there are people that I can go to because people are not used to seeing me like that. And I always tend to have those vulnerable moments alone, or like if I have a problem, if I'm sad about anything, that's something that I deal with in private. That's not something that's like, oh, let me hit up the group chat and like ask people for their opinions, you know? And I think because of that whole thing of also being guarded, I've become a person who does not know how to ask for help. Like, I do not know how to ask for help, even in like starting this brand, or just asking someone to do something for me is like so hard for me because that's never been an option. Not that that's never been an option, but it just always feels like if I ask, like, just growing up, it just always felt like asking someone to do something for me, they're probably not going to do it the way I want them to do it. Or if I have to ask someone that's supposed to do something for me to do it, then they just didn't want to do it in the first place. So, asking for help is like has been the hardest thing. And that's something that I've been working on a lot this year. That's something that I'm continuing to work on as I move forward, as I get older, because I'm starting to understand that maybe I created this image of a strong girl, who knows how to do everything. And I don't know how to do everything. I know that I understand, that I acknowledge that. And it's definitely been a journey for me to learn how to ask for help. Like, that's very hard for me. But I think that's been something that I've been needing to do in these last couple of, this last 2 years, especially because, again, I've just been the girl. When I was younger, I just kind of figured everything out, right? I figured out the answers because didn't nobody around me have the answers. And especially because I was determined to not be dependent on anybody. The most impactful part of my story is coming to America. So in 2003, I came to America, and I remember sitting in a car and I was thinking, like, damn, 10 years from now, I'm going to be in college. Again, I come from a place where all of my aunties are wives. All of my cousins are married as soon as they're 13. Like, everybody's married. All the women in my family did when I was in Guinea was cook and clean. And all we did was we ate the udon. Like, those were the things that were important to our family. So being a Fulani, right, because I was going to be given the opportunity to go to school and get an education, and I was going to go to college. And that was, like, my biggest, it was just my biggest dream. Like, there was a lot of backlash in my family. I remember hearing people say, oh, like, don't send your daughter to America, because when you send them to America, they change and they become bad girls. And what bad girls mean to them is, when you send your daughter to America, she begins to see that there's another way of life. There's another way to live your life beyond this oppressive, male-centered way of life that we've been living. And they start to question, right? And questioning is, like, something that we just don't do. As a woman, you're just supposed to do what you're told. Or at least that's what everyone around me seemed to be doing. So college was supposed to be the thing that saved me. And for I wanted to go to college, even though I had these great dreams for myself. I tried to be Rahilu, the dreamer, the dancer, the model, the this, all the things that I do, and still try to be Rahilu, the good, well-behaved, traditional Fulani girl. And those two identities always clash. And for a long time, I really struggled trying to figure out how to make those two parts of myself live in peace. And they just didn't go together, you know. They just always conflicted. I think that has been one of my biggest challenges, because I didn't want anyone to say, oh, look, we told you she was gonna come to America, and start to question. Like, for example, just me, like, sometimes if I'm sitting in a room with family members and we're talking and they're talking about something and I, like, give my input, automatically it's like, see, I told you so, she got an education and now she's straying away from the culture and she doesn't want to be like us, she thinks she's better than us. And it's like, no, bro, like, there's other ways to live our lives, and we don't have to oppress women and make women cater to us just so we can make women cater to men just so men can feel powerful. But, you know, if I say that, it's like, oh, look, we told you so. So for a long time I struggled with that, but I think when I decided to just create the life that I wanted, because I realized, like, everyone around me was miserable. Like, no one seemed to be happy. I realized that that's when I started to come into my own as a person. And that also sparked me having to unlearn many of the traditional, cultural, just the way of life, just the way that I live my life and the things that I was taught. I kind of had to start the process of unlearning and creating the life that I wanted to live. And that has been extremely challenging as well. And I think that journey for me really started when I went to college, right? And finally, I had gotten to college. My biggest dream, when I graduated, I cried. I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the world. Yada, yada. I was just so happy to go to college. And boy, when I got to college, when I tell you, college snapped me into pieces. I had built up college to be my happily ever after. And so this was the first time I had left home. And this was the first time for a little while I was a little bit more still, because when I was in high school, I was always active, right? And I just was sad. Like, I remember I used to cry. I used to literally cry. One time, I remember I cried like a whole week, and I didn't even know why I was crying. I felt like shit all the time. And I think that was the first time I realized that no matter what it is, because for a long time, I attached my happiness to my success, right? So dating back to the beginning of time, yo, when I used to be mad at anybody, if anybody said something to me, if someone in my family treated me this way, I would apply to a scholarship. I would apply to a internship. And because of that, I had the opportunity to do so many things, because every time I got mad and I felt like I couldn't control the situation that I was in, I would apply for something and I would actually get it. Like, that was qualified, of course, but it just always worked out that way, right? So I applied to things. And so when I got to college, yeah, I had a little bit more time on my hands and I was just sad. So what did I do? I delved into things. So in college, I did fashion shows, theater productions. I used to TA, actually. I used to TA for my African dance teacher. So I did that. I interned at like the PR office. I used to run my university's Instagram page at one point. I just did everything. Like, I think if one project ended, I couldn't wait for the next project. And that's when I started hosting things. So I hosted galas, I hosted auctions, I hosted the homecoming show at Binghamton. I hosted everything. Like, I was just always doing something. I was in a theater production my sophomore year of college, and I had practice every day from 10 after school, from 5 to 11. And then I had practice from 10 to 5 on Saturdays. And when that ended, I remember a week after, it was incredible, by the way. You guys should watch it, Orpheus. It's on YouTube. It was one of my favorite experiences in college. I actually was in a theater production. I had, you know, when the actresses, they have the picture of them and a little bio at the bottom. I had that. It was an incredible experience. But when that finished, I don't know. I didn't have nothing else to do. So I was just so sad and so depressed. And I've always been that person who's always working. And what I'm realizing now is that I'm not necessarily working because I want to. I'm working because that's the only thing that makes me feel better. Because when I sit still, I feel like crap. Like, that's just the reality of it. And I know it was just hard. Like, it was hard because I felt like I was always carrying a load inside of my chest. And if I stopped moving, it would crush me. Literally, that's how I felt. And that's how I felt most of my life, to be honest with you. And again, that was just stemmed from like coming from a culture that didn't know how to nurture, didn't necessarily care about the kid. As long as you were eating, you were good, and you didn't have emotions because you don't have to worry about bills. But it's like, a bitch had been through a lot. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just had been through a lot. And I don't even think this podcast will do it justice, because it's not even about the experiences that I've been through. It's more so how they made me feel on the inside, right? Like, that was like the biggest thing. So when I went to college, like, I just had time to feel it, and it just didn't feel good at all. And again, I know a lot of y'all follow me, and y'all see I've done all of these great things, but it's just, man, like, I think I was hella depressed in college. So I just stopped talking to people around me, and I kept all of that inside, which made it worse. I just continued to work hard and do this and do that and do this and do that and just do all these great things. Yeah, I still felt empty all the time. My senior year of college, I studied abroad. And this is when I understood that I had a problem. So I finished everything and I was like, okay, I'm going to study abroad. And I was in Valencia for 4 months. And while I was studying abroad, I went to Paris, I went to Prague, I went to Ibiza, I went to Portugal, Italy, met a lot of different places. Like, I traveled. And again, for a girl who's from Guinea, who comes from a family where no one probably has been anywhere, like, I was living the dream, or at least that's what it looked like on the outside. But when I went to Valencia, it was also another time where I didn't have nothing to do, right? So I had class from 9 to 3. I went to the beach every day. My host mom cooked, she cleaned, she made our beds. Like, she didn't want us to touch anything. She was a bit crazy, and she tried me a little bit. But I didn't have to do anything. I would just wake up, and I'd be so sad. And I think mainly, I just didn't feel like I deserved the life I was living. You know what I'm saying? And I think it was the same thing that was happening to me in college, where, like, even though I was away from home and even though I was in Valencia, there were still things going on in my family, or there were still things going on in my home that still impacted me somehow, because at the end of the day, like, that's my family. There I was in Spain, traveling every week and living my best life, but feeling hella freaking alone and just always feeling like, bro, do I even deserve to be here? But, you know, to everyone on the outside, it was just like, damn, look at Ra, she's living her best life. People would hit me up all the time because they wanted to know about my travels, not because they necessarily really wanted to know how I was doing. And so while I was in Spain, that's when I really started to understand the power of God, because I'm raised a Muslim. I believe in God. And we are raised, like, if you know Fulani Guinean Muslim families, like, everybody in my family knows the Quran from front to back. Everybody wears a hijab. Everybody prays all the time. Everybody is devout. But one thing that I struggle with when it comes to Islam, I think a lot of people just do, or they like do what they're supposed to do. So they pray, but it almost feels like a performance, right? So when I was in Spain, I had so much time, and no one, like, literally not a lot of people called and checked in, right? That's when I felt most alone in the world. Like, I was just like, damn, like, if anything was to go wrong in my life, like, no one could fix it for me but God. And that's the only thing that made me feel better. Like, that's the only thing that gave me peace. Me, it was just a personal connection, because I felt like that was the only thing that kept me sane. And again, no one would know this because actually this is the first time that I'm talking about this. But Spain was important because it was the first time I was able to sit down and feel my feelings without any distractions at all. I was able to feel every ugly thing that I had felt in my heart, because again, like, I just always felt heavy on the inside. So then I came back and I applied to grad school, because I never imagined what my life could look like and would look like after college, or even, yeah. So initially I was going to be a teacher, because I just had this desire to help people and to talk, to be a mentor. But I remember when I was in a sophomore, I worked at the Boys and Girls Club, and I would facilitate these workshops with girls who were like 13, 12 till I believe 17, from 12 to 17. And I would just hear them share their stories, and it would be stories of rape, and it was just craziness. Like, it would be just stories of just like rape and like dealing with the police and self-esteem and all this. And every single day I would go home and crawl into my bed and cry, because for some reason I understood that I was so sensitive to these topics, and I felt like I couldn't be a good teacher because I had to deal with my own shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had to heal from my childhood traumas, and hearing them talk about their experiences always triggered me. I literally went home every single day and cried. I would literally crawl into my bed and cry every single Wednesday. And I was just like, man, I'm not ready to be a teacher. I'm not ready to be in a classroom. I don't feel like I have enough strength to have the life of these youth in my hands, because I'm gonna just cry every day in class. So before I left to Spain, I applied to grad school, because the way I thought about it, I was like, all right, well, I don't want to be a teacher, right? But I know that media has great influence on people. Everything we learn is now through media. It's at our fingertips. So I'm like, hey, you know, if I want to influence the youth, I can go to grad school and learn how to make things that evoke emotions, that start conversations. I can make films. I can just learn how to create content that touch people's lives and impact the youth or whoever I want to impact that way, right? I want to tell the stories of the women who come from where I come from. Stories that I feel like were often not told or just looked over. So I'm like, oh, hey, let me apply to grad school. And so I did. And I came back from Spain. I graduated. And again, it didn't feel like it was enough because I had put so much emphasis on a degree. And then I graduated, then I came back to New York City. And I think if I was to really give the eras of my life a title, me living in Guinea before I came to America was the beginning of it all, because it taught me who I didn't want to be, right? I think the next era, which would probably be middle school, high school, was me just sacrificing and following the rules, because I just had this illusion that if I sacrifice those moments, it would all pay off when I made it to college or in the future. And I think I spent a lot of that time living in the future and not taking advantage of being young and not having responsibilities. I was so eager to grow up because I needed to grow up in order to take care of myself. And I was so eager to get a job. Like, I just wanted to be an adult so bad. I felt like there were no real adults around me, so I kind of had to be the adult. And then, you know, college was definitely the breakdown, you know, the time where basically everything that I believed in was questioned. And so it gave me a chance to start the process of creating the person who I want to be. And I'm still working on that process. It's not necessarily a finished process. And I will say grad school has been the beginning of the healing period. And this is the reason why I can have these conversations. I can sit here now and have this conversation without probably crying, because the last 2 years I've been hella intentional about my healing. And I felt all the ugliness and all the pain. And now I'm just really working on creating new habits and, you know, small things like not shutting down, like when I feel not shutting down, and just being honest with people about my story, especially being honest with the people around me about how I feel about things, and also just learning to forgive, right? I think that's really important. A lot of times we want people who have done us wrong to acknowledge or to even apologize. And the biggest lesson that I've learned is that a lot of people will do shit to you and not think that they did anything to you. And so you spend a lot of time holding on to grudges or just harboring emotions inside of you. And these people don't even know or don't even really care. So I just kind of just forgave everyone that I felt like did me wrong. And I think that has created space for me to focus on other things. Because, you know, when you think about something in the past, or when you just hold on to the past, it almost feels like that person is winning, especially if that person's goal was to kind of control you. So I've just kind of let everything go. You know, some days I still feel the weight that I've been feeling in my heart, but I just really have been teaching myself to stop placing all of my happiness on my accomplishments, right? And again, like, I think I've done it all. I've met famous people, I've traveled, I wear nice clothes. I've kind of done a lot. And what I'm learning is that it's not really about what you do or who you know or the status you have or the clothes you wear. It's really about how you feel in your heart, because a lot of times we use all those external things to cover how we really feel. So I've just really been focused on working on my heart and working on myself and working on the way I react to things, the way I view things, and just how I look at the world, you know. Definitely having to shift a lot of my views and having to question a lot of things. But I think that it's also been an opportunity for me to look at how other people are doing things and learning from people around me who don't necessarily come from the same cultural background as me. And also just straying away from that living on survival lifestyle, you know, because that's no longer something that I need now. So how do I thrive? That's been like the biggest question for me. In 2019, like, I'm trying to thrive. Like, I'm not trying to be living on survival anymore. I'm trying to live on love. I'm trying to thrive. I'm trying to flourish. And I'm trying to take things to the next level. And I felt like because I was holding on to so much in the past, I was kind of stuck for a little bit. But now that I'm healing and letting go, I think that I'm definitely going to be unlocking a new level of abundance and just love and just peace. And to me, that's the most important thing, honestly. In everything that I do and every time I pray, I always pray for peace. So for 2019, that's the goal. More peace, no longer living on survival, thriving, and just letting go of all the bullshit that's been holding me back, man. So I'm trying to take over the world. So I think that's it. There's definitely a lot more I can say about my life, but I think as I interview people and as I have conversations with different folks on this podcast, you'll get to learn a little bit more about me. That was just a basic fundamental of how I came to be as a person. Thank you for listening, and make sure you're following The Toilet Podcast on Instagram. Make sure you're checking out our website to keep up with all the stuff that we're doing. And I will see you on the next podcast. Bye.